back.
Miss Amy is back with an all-new Living Way Out Here on the Survival Circle Network. Join Amy for an uplifting hour of fun on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday evenings at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Survival Circle. Welcome to the Shooting Bench on Survival Circle Radio Network, keeping you informed on guns, news, politics, guns, survival, preparedness, and guns. The tyrant is holding our country hostage, and our freedom is at stake. It's time to take a stand and tell the tyrant, we will not comply. Join me now in the never-ending fight against tyranny, right here on the Shooting Bench. All right, here we are. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. It seems like I'm just getting started, and I'm already having company here. Yep, I'm having company. This is my wife, his company. What can you help me with today?
Do you have any big plastic bags?
Black bags? Let me...
I thought we had some somewhere.
Stand by just one second. We have something very important happening here, and I'm going to share this with you in just a minute. Mm-hmm. So if you'll give me just a second here... I got to buy a little bit of time, and I'll be right back. Okay, we're back already. Yeah, it was too early for a break. I had talked for like a minute and a half. But it is the 3rd of June, and it's a Wednesday. Wednesdays, we always start a little late because I have Boy Scout responsibilities that I have to take care of. So that's just the nature of the beast on Wednesday nights. Obviously, still lots of stuff going on. But one of the important things right now, to us, anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about what the our kids here in our church are doing tomorrow, or the next 3 days. Some of you may not be familiar with Mormon history. We had, let me find my deal here, but most of you know that we had the stuff went on back east, you know, and then with the assassination of Joseph Smith in 1844 and all that, then they started, the Mormons started moving west. And it was quite a an undertaking. After Joseph Smith got killed, then it was Brigham Young that was the president of the church at that time, and he started moving people west, and he got to the Salt Lake Valley and said, "Yep, well, this is it. This is the right place. This is where we're going to stay." So that's basically where the church was established. It was established back in Missouri to start with, but anyway, well, I'm not trying to get into church history too much other than this particular event. In 1849, Brigham Young set up a fund to help other immigrants that were Latter-day Saints get into where they were at. So there were, they came from all over, you know, the all over Europe and the Scandinavia and whatever. And so we helped them establish this fund to help them reach America. And at the time, over a third of the all of the Mormon immigrants at that time were from Europe. So to cut down on the cost of wagons and oxen and mules and whatever the case was, there were about 3,000 of the pioneers had wooden, what they called hand carts. And these were small little wagons that were pulled by the people that were moving. And there were either one family or five individuals were assigned to a hand cart. And about 15 or 20 people sharing a tent during the travel. And each cart was to haul no more than 200 pounds, which was, you know, somewhere between 15 and 20 pounds per person. That's all they brought. That's all you could carry. If you didn't have your own, you know, horses and mules or llamas or whatever to haul stuff. So this was a pretty organized deal, and they had a guide that had made the trip before, an experienced guide that would help them. And there were some supply wagons. Now, they didn't have all their supplies in this handcart. They had supply wagons that, you know, that the oxen and the mules or whatever pulled. And but this was just their personal belongings was all that they had to put in the handcarts. So in, let's see, I guess it was, I don't remember what year it was, but anyway, a couple of the handcart companies left late. I say companies, it was a company they had set up in companies like, you know, like the military has a company. It's not companies like commercial companies. But anyway, they left a little late. They had about 1,000 people between them, 400 or 500 people apiece. And they got into Wyoming, and I've been to this place in Wyoming where they, out of that 1,000 or so people that started the trip, over 200 of them died in this, I forgot what the name of this place is. I've been there, and it was in the winter when I was there, when I was driving through there. And it is cold, desolate. It is a long, long ways from anywhere. Definitely their faith was being tested at the time. But at any rate, they you know, they buried a lot of people along the way. Under Brigham Young's leadership there, there were something like 70,000 Mormons had made this trip to Utah. That was before the railroad come in. So what I'm getting at here is that the this trek, this pioneer trek that they started, this was a, you remember we talked the other day about leadership? And in order for people to put up with the things that they put up with, you have to love your leader. You have to respect them. You have to literally love your leader. That's why, you know, and then we talked about Audie Murphy the next day after that, and he said, why did he get up there in that burning tank and start running that machine gun? And he said, they were killing my friends. So in order for people to undertake such a monumental deal such as this trek, they definitely had to love their leader. So what goes on here every year, and it's not every single place out there, it's up to the individual areas of the church if they want to do this, but they have what they call the trek. And youth, usually they don't let anybody go that's under 14 and under, you know, younger than 18. And they duplicate as close as they can this trek that so many people died on. They don't make it easy for them, folks. This is not for the faint of heart. This is something that I know a great many adults that could not make this trip. A great many adults that not only couldn't make it, but wouldn't try. Over a period of 3 days, these kids are going to cover 25 miles, taking all of the stuff that they take with them on the trek on the hand cart. They cover, I don't know how it's divided up. It's 8 or 9 miles one day and 8 or 9 miles next day and 6 or 7 miles the next day and something like that. There is a couple of less miles on the last day, but it's 25 miles. It's summertime. They are not allowed to have cell phones, laptops, iPods, any of that kind of stuff. Cameras, they can't, I mean, there'll be pictures taken, but it'll be by adults and supervisors that are on the trip. It will not be by the kids. The kids and, well, the kids are going to, as nearly as possible, duplicate the same conditions as they did back in 18, whatever. And so they can't take hardly anything that is plastic. Of course, nowadays there's a lot of things that are not made that were made back then. But as close as they can, they have to wear, the girls have to wear solid pioneer, you know, period correct clothing. This would be ankle length dresses, lightweight cotton dresses, and long sleeve. There'll be no tank tops, t-shirts, anything like that. They're going to wear the exact same thing that they did in 18, whatever I said a while ago. And one of the few things that they're allowed to take that the pioneers didn't have is a 5-gallon bucket. They can't take, other than their sleeping bag, they can't take anything that won't fit in this 5-gallon bucket. So any first aid stuff, any you know, sunscreen, any of that kind of stuff that they need will fit in this 5-gallon bucket. And that is their life. Their plate, silverware, you know, mess kit, whatever they're taking, everything goes in the 5-gallon bucket. These kids are divided up. They don't go with the same kids from their own church, their own ward, as we call it. There will be people from several wards there, and they'll mix them all up so that everybody learns how to get along with people just as they did originally. And there'll be what's called a ma and pa. They have a married older couple that will be a ma and pa for a certain group of kids. The ma and pa furnishes they take care of basically what would be the supply trains, like I told you, that they had on the original trek. And they would they'll have the cooking stuff and the food and the you know, the additional water. The kids are allowed to take a water bottle or something. They prefer that they take something you know, a canteen of some sort. But what was I trying to think of here? Oh, the Mon Pond, they have a big tent or tarp or something like that, and all the kids kind of have a community tent. And they're allowed to take one change of clothes. And obviously, since it's the 21st century, they're not allowed to just go out behind a bush and tinkle or whatever. They do have literally either porta potties along the way or a trailer mounted porta potty or something like that. Unless they're out, you know, on public land way out away from the town, so I don't know what the deal is there. But anyway, that's what's going on for the next 3 days with these kids. Doc, I'm not sure if non-members can go or not. It would be absolutely an excellent experience for any kids. And I've never thought about that. I've never asked. I would think probably so, because we are very adamant about allowing people from other faiths to join in most of what we do, except some of the any of the temple ordinances and stuff like that. But for the most part, non-members are welcome to do just about anything that we do. So I would think probably so, but I'll see if I can get an answer and let you know tomorrow. But this is something that these kids learn: teamwork, perseverance, physical conditioning, and it literally tests their faith. I mean, not like going for months on end, you know, taking 2 or 3, 4 months, whatever it took, 6 months, to get from Missouri or whatever. Yeah, yak, maybe that's what the bucket's for. Could be. It's not like having to go out sun up to sundown for months at a time to get where you're going. But it gives them a taste of what they're doing there for 3 days. And it is as far as I'm concerned, it is probably one of the most important things that these kids can do with their summer. It's an absolutely amazing experience for them. Doc, I'm not sure what you mean. You do consider Mormons to represent another? Of course, they're another Christian denomination. You know, I've never understood about it. It's so stupid to me that people think that Mormons are not Christians for whatever reason. That's just absurd. Let me see if I can give some of them a clue that might think otherwise. The name of the full proper name of the church is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Now, that I don't know a whole lot of folks that were named Jesus Christ back in that time, so I'm thinking that we are accepting the same gospel and Jesus Christ is our Savior, just like anybody else or just like any other Christian denomination does. I don't know why some people think otherwise, but I can tell you that it is absolutely absurd. That's just crazy. Let's see. What's C7 here? Last post that I said. Will someone remove that? It was not my words. Let's see. Maybe somebody already removed it. I don't even see it. I see. I can get rid of that right now for you. There you go. Okay. Let's look and see what we got to talk about today. Let me get some of this stuff straightened up and out of the way here. Something that came up in conversation today, as it does fairly frequently, And we may have talked about it before here. If we did, it's been quite some time. But that is, what do you do? What is the proper way to handle it? If you're carrying a gun or have a gun in the car, what's the proper way to handle it when you get stopped? Well, there is a tremendous amount of conflicting information on that topic, and none of them include Bruce Jenner. I had to say that because I think Kit's still listening there somewhere. She was there earlier. No, it looks like she's gone now. No, I'm with Kit. It was Kit was on Facebook today just going on about people talking about Bruce Jenner. And I don't blame her. With all the things that's going on in this world, why in the world have we spent 1 minute talking about how brave and courageous and everything that freak show is? That just that tickles me to death here. Excuse me, goodness. It looks like Casper Mountain is listening out there, and he has reminded me what that place, and I think that's right. It is Martin's Cove that's on Highway 220 just south of Freedom Rock in Wyoming. That was the place I was talking about. So thank you, Casper Mountain. So, yeah, Doc, I knew what you meant, but not of Christians, not don't consider Mormons to be Christians. I understand. I knew exactly what you meant, and I agree with you. And why... Well, I won't even go there. I don't even understand how why people think that. But anyhow, goodness me. All right, we're going to talk about what the correct answer was, and I've got a deal here I want to play for you, if I can find. Oh. Do you know what the average, some of you may have seen this on the news today. Do you know what the average rent is for an apartment, for people, for a family, for normal folks in San Francisco, California? Take a guess. If you didn't read the article, you're not going to guess right. The average rent in San Francisco right now is $4,225. No, I'm not talking about renting a warehouse or a cathedral or a stadium, or I'm talking about a two-bedroom apartment. Why anybody would want to live in one of the worst cities in America, in one of the least freedom-enjoying states in America? Now, if they were paying $325 for a two-bedroom apartment, that might be some motivation to be there. $4,225. Now, this one place here, two bedroom, two bath in the financial district, Rincon, I guess they call it, Hills. $4,500 a two bedroom, two bath condo. $4,500 a month. And parking is extra. Yeah, you pay a little extra to park your car, but you can have a two-bedroom apartment there for $4,500. There was another one here. The Fillmore Center. Fillmore Center, two-bedroom, two-bath, $4,209. And that $4,209, one of the things that you get with that is a coin-operated laundry. Yep. Just thought I'd throw that in there just for lack of anything better to do. So you can do with that what you will. My internet's running a little slow, so I'm here stuttering a little bit, trying to get things going. Hold on a minute. I'm being attacked by a kid again. What do you need?
Duct tape.
It's out there in the toolbox of my truck. To open the top.
Can I just press that red button?
Yeah, if it's unlocked, it's in the top tray of the toolbox.
Okay.
All right. Let's move on. Oh, we were going to talk about the, if a cop pulls you over and you're armed, what do you do? Well, there are a lot of people out there. These are the type of people that they love freedom, not willing to do much to protect it. They the kind of people that will say, yeah, well, next year we'll vote them out. And next year we'll vote them out. We've been saying next year we'll vote them out for, you know, for 100 years. And next year just never seems to get here. And those are the people that tell you that you should always show your, you know, let the cop know that you have a gun and show him your permit as soon as he walks up to the car. Now, in some states, you have to, by law, you have to do that. Now, whether or not you want to follow the law, that's you know, that's between you and whoever, you and the fence post. But they tell you that you should have. Now, I do agree with having both hands on the steering wheel. I'm okay with that. I think that's a very wise idea. That keeps you from getting dead if the cop gets jumpy. So have both hands on the steering wheel. And when the cop comes up, he's going to ask you for your, you know, registration and license and stuff. At that time, everything that you do from that point on should be done very slowly. But, and deliberately, and anything that you have to do as far as leaning over or doing anything like that, then you have to make sure that you, this doesn't have anything to do with a gun. This is just common sense. Make sure you let the cop know that, you know, your registration is in the glove box. I'm going to reach over and get it, and he's probably going to ask you if there's a gun or anything in it. Okay. Well, I'll have to get, I don't have any in here. Let me see what B2 Basics got up here. B2 Basic, you and I will have to do some talking when I get up there. But I just make this real short and to the point. Our knowledge is not going to be taken when we die. So we'll have to discuss this further when we get up there. Let's see. My contention is here what I do. And I'm not saying what you should do. You have to decide what you're going to do. When I see the lights come on, I take my gun out right then and reach over and slide it under the back seat of my truck where I can't reach it. Now, you want to do, if it's at night, you want to do this before the spotlight comes on and lights you up in there, and you want to do it discreetly. Certainly, C7 says, New Mexico, in your car, that you shall refrain from telling a cop what in the world, thou shall refrain from telling an NM cop from disinvoking. What in the world are you talking about? Have no idea what all that is. But in New Mexico, what it says is that when a cop asks you for your permit and you're in public, if he asks in public, you are required by law to show it to him. Now, if you're in your car, technically, you're not in public because that's considered an extension of your home. So you have to decide if you want to pursue that any further or just comply with what they say. In Utah, you're required to show them your gun and your license when you're stopped, whether they ask or not. So I put mine away, and usually I've been asked if you are wearing a gun. And I can say, you can say whatever you want. You can say no. You can say it's none of your business. Or you can say, am I being detained? Or you can say whatever. So, but if they ask if I'm wearing one, I tell them no, I'd be perfectly correct. If they ask me to get out of the car, then I don't have the... uncomfortable position of having to tell them, well, I'm wearing a gun. What would you like for me to do with it when I get out? So I'd rather just have it out of the way where it's not in question. When I do get out, I lock the door as I'm stepping out and with the windows rolled up and close the door and lock it when I get out. If I have to get out. And what that does is prevent them from, unless they want to go get a warrant, then there's no way that they can tell me, oh, you know, we need to look in your car or whatever. They're not going to be doing it unless they want to break the windows. And I think some of you may have heard how I get back in if I need to, but I'm not going to say it on here anymore. But I don't agree with, some people say, well, it's professional courtesy. No, it's not professional courtesy. It's stupid. Professional courtesy is something like, let's say that you belong to an organization that has their own, your own little uniforms and everything. And let's say, let's just use a salute as an example. When you see someone who is the higher up boss type person of your little organization, and you are required by your bylaws to offer them a hand signal of some kind. If you, because it's professional courtesy. There is no professional courtesy between civilians and cops. There is no such thing. You're not in the same profession. You're not doing the same thing. And when you mention that you have a gun, about 75, 80 times out of 100, at least, that cop's demeanor is going to change. Even if he's a good cop, it may change. Now, sometimes it doesn't. Here in Arizona, usually, it's a matter of, okay, so what? So does everybody else. But in some places, that's not the case. I was in Georgia one time and did that, and the guy said, yeah, well, I kind of figured, and it's no big deal. But in some places, you can see the hackles go up on the back of their neck, and they are definitely ready to everything about them changes. I'm trying to keep up with what I see in the chat here. So if you don't say anything, if they don't have a warrant, they're not going to get in there and see that you have put the gun somewhere safe. If I have time to do it without making a big deal out of it, I'll probably unload the gun and clear it and put it away and put it somewhere where they Can't find it. And like I said, if I get out, I lock the door. And I've got another deal. I'm not even going to tell you, but I have another thing that makes that real, real easy. And I'll let some of you know up in Washington when I get up there. But I don't consider it professional courtesy if it doesn't put their mind at ease. That is a stupid assumption. It will sometime, once in a while. Not frequently. In Wyoming, maybe. Arizona, Montana, maybe. California, no. Massachusetts, no. So, that's right. Doc's got a good point there. That's the way you do it. Yeah, what's the matter, fatso? The donut shop's closed. That's not professional courtesy. No, it's absolutely not. So, I don't know. I'm kind of bouncing around. I hope I'm not losing all of you here. But I've got a lot of stuff going on here I'm trying to keep up with. But the way that they talk to you, more often than not, after you tell them that you have a gun there. Now, the thing is, the problem with this is when they find out, their amateur courtesy, yeah. When they find out, there is a good chance that they're going to ask you for that gun because they want to take control of it while this is going on. This is another really, really dumb thing. I have seen, if I were a cop, why would I want you to hand me your gun? Why would I put you in a position that you could kill me and I couldn't stop you? At least if you moved for the gun real quickly, I may have some way of getting out of the way and getting my gun out of the holster, you know, if I were the cop. But why would I want you to hand it to me? That just doesn't make any sense at all. And then there's the matter of how the officer handles the gun after you do give it to him, and he has to hand it back to you. Why not just leave well enough alone? Okay, if you have a gun, fine. If you don't, fine. I just give you license registration, okay? Keep your hands on the steering wheel. Keep your ends. At night, of course, you want to turn your inside dome light on before they come up there. That's it's courtesy to them, and it kind of puts their mind at ease a little bit where they can see, and I'm okay with that. That makes sense to me. That's common sense. There's no confusion, many, because I don't mean professional courtesy. I said some people refer to that as professional courtesy. I don't, because there is no such thing as professional courtesy between cops and civilians. It doesn't exist. If you're not in the same line of work in the same profession somehow, professional courtesy would be when one cop stops another one. That would be professional courtesy. What that cop does and how he conducts himself there, that would be professional courtesy. When one truck driver understands what it takes for another truck driver to back into a spot and moves in such a way as to accommodate him, then that would be professional courtesy. There is no professional courtesy between truck drivers and bulldozer operators or whatever. So, yep, that's exactly what I said, Minnie. What you're posting there is just what I said. So, didn't know lawyers practice professional courtesy. That's a fact. I didn't know lawyers practice courtesy at all. Anyhow, that's, I don't know if I've confused you worse than it was when we started here, but I don't agree with so many other people that say that it is professional courtesy, that it's the right thing to do, it puts the cop mind at ease, da 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 da. It doesn't. I'm afraid that you will make things worse, or you have the potential of making things worse by offering information that's none of their business. And that's the whole crux of this discussion right there, is it is none of their business. That's the whole deal. It's none of their business, period. What is C7 rambling about there now? Such an old topic, comms, radios. I have no idea. We're not talking about comms and radios. We can, if you want to. I actually was going to say something real quick about radios tonight, just because it's come up in some of the things that I've been talking about with other people here over the last few days. And that's CBs. People think that these newfangled, groovy little Bofangs and all that are, and they are, they're neat radios, but they're still not CBs. They're redundancy in communication is a wonderful thing, and having CB and this other one, I think, is a great thing. So the CBs tuned properly, more people have them out on the roads, more people have them in their homes. They don't require a license. You can buy them at Walmart and installed and tuned properly. It is the best communication that you can get for the money and for the purposes that we're talking about. And there are lots of uses, more uses for CB than there are for ham and shortwave than there is a CB, but the CB is still more commonly used than the shortwave, especially out on the road. And CB. And by the way, I have checked, because this came up with an individual that asked me to come look. There's a friend of mine that has moved into a, well, he's in the process of moving. He hasn't closed on it yet. But he found a little farm-looking outfit out here that the guy had. He said he'd prayed about it and waited and saw lots of other good places, but something wasn't just right. And he saw this one. He said, this one is right. And I'll tell you what, this guy's got a nice house out there. He's got a what looks to be probably a 3,000, 4,000 or 5,000 gallon water tank, and a 1,000 or 2,000 gallon water tank right beside it. Everything is controlled with you can get on a computer in there, and in the computer you can turn on all the lights, start the pump, start the irrigation, do whatever, sitting there while you're having breakfast. It's just a really, really neat place. I'm really happy for him that he's found this place. And but the discussion came up about radios, and so when I left his place there, I got on the phone and talked to my distributor that I had when I was really into CBs and stuff, and found out that my account's all squared away and everything on that, so I'm going to be starting to offer CBs also, along with the other radios that we do all the time. There are lots of good brands of CBs. Matter of fact, there are very few bad ones. CBs are like so many other things, where the basic, most important part inside is made by a reputable company, and all the stuff that doesn't matter on the outside is made by fly-by-night companies sometimes. There's hardly any really bad CBs. But some of the good ones, if you're looking for just a something for your car, Midland makes good radios. Cobra makes good radios. Radio Shack makes good radios. Hell, I run a Radio Shack radio for probably 20 years. And it was still working. I sold it when I was in Farmington. It was still working then. Some of the LED things were burning out, but the radio was still working. Uniden makes a good radio. go to a truck stop. Go to a truck stop and ask them for a decent radio. There's not going to be any bad radios at a truck stop. The truckers won't get them, and they just won't last. They buy a bunch of stuff and then can't get rid of it. So, but you can, and I'll tell you, there's some. I can email you some information on that stuff if you want when we get done here. But let me see which one. Eddie just posted one on here. Let me see what it is. Yeah, that's a Uniden. Now, Uniden makes a lot of the main boards and circuitry inside of lots of the radios. Uniden is a pretty cheap radio. They're good. They're very, very, very basic. And but they're okay. This one that Eddie posted here, depending on which one you want to get, they run from $35 to $50. I would look for a Cobra 29. Cobra 29 is an exceedingly good radio. Easy to tune, easy to they put out really well. Matter of fact, the Cobra 29 is what Amy has in her car. And and you can find Cobras at good prices, and there's probably some of them on Amazon as far as that goes. But you can find them at any truck stop in the United States. Promise you, any truck stop you stop at, if they sell radios at all, they'll have Cobra 29s in there. The 29s and the 25s are both good radios. But let's see. People, one of the reasons that CB kind of fallen out of favor is because people don't know how to. Partisan Gorilla has a good choice, a good point there, and that is that if you can get a sideband radio, it's definitely a plus. I won't go into the whole technical aspect of that, but sideband kind of gives you additional channels that are quieter. There's more power in the radios. There is no downsides for sideband, except that everybody on the road out there is not going to have them. Sideband would be more if you have a group or an organization or people that you're going to get a hold of, and you've prearranged channels and whatnot. But you're not going to find as many people with single sideband driving down the highway as you will just on channel 19 on a plain old CB. But as he said, that is definitely a plus for the sideband. One of the reasons that CB kind of fell out of favor is because people were not spending the time, spending the money, didn't know, didn't care in tuning them properly. And if you don't have, you can have a pretty basic, sorry radio and a good quality, well-tuned antenna, and that radio will talk. On the other hand, you can have the best damn radio that money can buy, and if your antenna sucks, your radio sucks. That antenna is the radio. If you have your standing wave ratio set properly on that, as low as possible, and everything else is hunky-dory and compatible as far as your cable and connections and all that stuff, your radio will talk. It'll talk well. So I don't care how much money you put into your radio, if you're not going to put a comparable amount of money into an antenna, then don't cry because it doesn't work the way you want it to. The antenna on my truck cost $180, just the antenna. I've got $700 worth of radio equipment in my truck. A radio is going to cost you a Cobra 29 is going to cost you somewhere in the vicinity, somewhere between $89 and $120, probably $129.95 or something like that at the most. And that is a good radio. You take one of those and hook it up to something like a K40 antenna or a 102-inch stainless steel whip or a Fire Stick or a Wilson 1000 or a Wilson 5000, something like that, you're going to have a combination. If that radio is tuned properly, you're going to have a combination there that will talk really, really well for you. But we could probably spend all night talking. Matter of fact, we have spent all night talking about that. It's almost quitting time already. So, like, we got to get Kelly up for a trek in the morning. We got to have her in town by ready to go by 6. And they're not going to have any radios and stuff out there on that. Of course, the Ma and Pa of the trip are going to have their way to communicate if there's an emergency, of course, but the kids won't have any of that kind of stuff. So just so everybody knows, if anyone is in, and I'll tell you right off the bat, you can probably find the radios and equipment and antennas that you need or want or on Amazon. I'll tell you that first thing. But there are some more specialty stuff that you may not be able to get. And if you have a questions on that kind of stuff, those are the kind of things that I can order for you if you want. Mini, if you want to move CBs between vehicles, yes, you can. But it's a little harder if you're going to install an antenna on each vehicle. If you install it and leave it and it's tuned for that particular radio, and leave it and don't mess with it, yes, you can. If you have the radio, the antenna tuned to your radio, you can take that, say for instance, a magnetic mount or any other kind of mount as far as that goes, and you take that antenna and move it and mount it in a comparable place on the other vehicle, your SWRs will remain the same, and it should be fine. When you start moving, putting cables in different places and antennas in different places, or just take any old antenna, that antenna, absolutely, listen to me, read my lips, that antenna must be tuned to your radio. Now, there is a slim possibility that you can just pick up an antenna somewhere and plug it in, and it might be close, but it'll be strictly the luck of the draw if it is. The antenna has to be tuned to your radio if you want the radio to work. And the other thing is, if it's very far off, if your antenna is too far off, it will burn your radio up if you leave your mic keyed too long. So don't take any chances with that. If you're not going to do it right, don't do it at all, because you can burn your radio up. Even if you don't burn it up, you're going to find out that you can't talk across the parking lot at Walmart. If your SWRs are too far off, you can't talk as far as you can throw a damn rock. But, like I said, you could take a cheap radio and a well-tuned, good-quality antenna, and that radio will talk. Let's see. Partisan Gorilla, you're right, and you're opening up a can of worms for us right there. We could spend another hour talking about that. Partisan Gorilla says one issue on a vehicle can be noise in the receiver from your ignition system. Just real quickly, a good way to get around that is to hook your hot wire, a good size insulated hot wire, directly to the battery, and don't run it, you know, across the engine or anywhere around the electronics and the alternator especially and all that. If you hook it up to just a hot spot in your fuse box, you may be able to hear the engine as it revs up. You can hear that on your radio, so going straight to your battery will make a big difference on that. Okay, let's see. Yeah, just C7 and Mini both. If you have any questions about it, or anybody else, no matter who it is. So just give me a holler if you need to. You can always email me, too, at theshootingbench@live.com, and I'll get right back with you. Be sure, if you guys are able to, I'd sure like to see you, if you possibly can, be up to the Arms Expo in Yakima, Washington, 20th and 21st of this month, and the three-day defensive handgun class coming up the following weekend. Also, in August, if you'll remember last year about that time, I was at a rendezvous over in Young, Arizona. Amazing country. What a place Young is. Well, they're doing it again this year. I've been invited to come over there and teach some classes and seminars and stuff, and set up a booth and sell some goodies and stuff like that. So if you happen to be in Arizona or traveling through Arizona or live there or whatever, I believe it's, I think it's the 9th and 10th of August, they're going to have the Survival Rendezvous in Young, Arizona. Awesome event. 3 days and nothing but information. In your lots of classes going on and stuff. Eddie Crump, now you know how to fix it, buddy. Okay. All right, I'm rambling. When I start rambling, that means it's time to go. So we'll see you all tomorrow night. Thanks for joining me. Appreciate you being here.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of The Shooting Bench. Please join Cope Monday through Friday for the most politically incorrect firearms information show on talk radio.
Lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for you to decide who you are. Somebody should call them. Somebody should write a letter. Somebody should try and stop that. Somebody should do something. I challenge you to look in the mirror and tell me what you see. If there's somebody there, that would be you. It's time for you to do something. There is no doubt that the Constitution is hanging by a thread. It's not going to wait for us much longer.